Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Cariad Lloyd. Griefcast is a place to talk, share and laugh about the peculiar human process of death and grief. Each week, I talk to a different person about their experiences of grief and death as we remember someone that they have lost along the way, whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club. Welcome to Griefcast.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Griefsters. I hope you're having an okay week. Wherever you are listening, we are rapidly approaching the holiday times, whether that's Christmas for you or Hanukkah or just winter festival times, and it's a lot of family chat and people planning to get together and stuff like that. So if you are missing someone this year, or even if you're missing them from a long time ago and you're finding this hard, I hope you're doing as okay as can be expected at this dark time of year. Light some candles, do something they would have enjoyed, spend some time with people you feel safe with, and remember, like, this too shall pass. Thank you so much for listening. Just a reminder, as I've been saying recently, my book You Are Not Alone is out very soon. It's out in about a month's time, actually, January 19th, 2023. It's everything I've learned from talking to all these people about their experiences of grief and death and everything that helped them and helped me on my 20 plus year journey. You can pre-order it, and if you do that, it's really helpful to me. It means the other bookshops go, oh, this book must be interesting, everyone's pre-ordering it. So please do pre-order it if you think you're probably going to buy it anyway. That would be hugely, hugely appreciated, and if you've done that already, thank you so much. We also have a book launch on January the 17th at Earth in Hackney in London. If you head to the Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast, you can find out more information about that, or head to Fane Productions, F-A-N-E, where you can buy your tickets. I will be interviewed by the incredible Fee Glover, former guest of the show. I'm very, very excited that she has agreed to talk to me about grief and death. And it will be, yeah, the usual cheery chat, hanging out with griefsters and people who don't mind talking about this stuff and aren't going to panic when we bring up grief. Thank you so much for listening to this season so far. This week I'm talking to the brilliantly talented Viv Groskop. Viv is a writer, she's a journalist, she's a comedian, she's a documentary maker. She is, yeah, I absolutely love Viv's writing. I just think she's one of those, yeah, extremely brilliant, readable writers. She's written lots of books: How to Own the Room, The Anna Karenina Fix, Lift As You Climb, Au Revoir Tristesse. She speaks many languages. She's, yeah, just an incredibly smart, intelligent, brilliant writer who has done lots of different things, and I really love a lot of the work that she does. I think she's a really interesting person. She has a brilliant podcast as well, where she interviews all sorts of people. That is also called How to Own the Room. And as I said, she's done lots of really interesting things, and I was just really grateful that she came along to speak to me. Viv came to talk to me about her grandparents, Vera and Ivor. who died a few years ago now. And I just want to mention, we do talk in this episode about child loss as well, just as a trigger warning. Here's Viv. So, Viv, who are we remembering today?
Today, Cariad, we are remembering my grandparents. My grandmother, Vera, who died in 2006, and my granddad, Ivor, who died in 2001.
Oh, bless Vera and Ivor. Those are lovely names.
Yeah, they're like proper old school names. My daughter is named after my grandma, so she's called Vera, and I was going to say both of my sons, but no, only one of my sons has a middle name from my granddad, and it's my dad's name is also Ivor. Oh. So in my family when I was growing up, my dad was young Ivor, and my granddad was old Ivor.
Right.
So yeah.
And now your son is mini Ivor, I guess.
Well, yeah, I think he probably doesn't really use the Ivor part of his name very much because it's not a very cool name these days, I'm sorry to say.
It'll come back round.
I'm sure it will.
They always do. So whose parents were they? Were they your mum's or your dad's?
They're my dad's parents.
Okay.
Yeah, my mum's parents I didn't know so well because my mum's from Northern Ireland and she came over to England in the late 60s to marry my dad. And then, you know, we just visited Northern Ireland very occasionally. But my grandparents on my father's side, they moved from Amersham, where they ran a shop for many, many years. But they moved to retire to where we lived in Somerset. And so I grew up with them from the age of 4. I saw them pretty much every day until I left home at 18.
Oh, wow. So they were a huge part of your upbringing.
They were a massive part of my upbringing. And my dad's an only child and my mum's got one brother who's in Northern Ireland. So it was really quite a small family.
Yeah.
So I was really, really close to my grandparents. They were a massive influence in my life. I was kind of known for being very close to my grandmother, that we were very, very similar as people. And I miss her, you know, almost. I think it's such a cringe when you have relatives in your family and you say that, like, they're your friend. But she was. And I try not to be purposefully try not to be friends with my own children. I don't think it's normal. It's not healthy. But yeah, she was really like a friend to me in a lot of ways, you know, because we were so similar in character and in interests. And, you know, when I was a teenager, we used to share clothes and shoes.
Oh my God,
and,
wow.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Wow, she that's was, so unusual yeah, for a grandma.
She was very cool. So I miss her, really miss her a lot. And, you know, unlike lots of people on this amazing podcast who've had all kinds of experiences of grief, I feel quite lucky that my experience of grief is, I think, you know, you can't have a hierarchy of grief, can you? But I think it's the most acceptable one, in that, you know, these were two people who lived well into their 80s, who had a great life, who I don't think either of them necessarily knew that they were going to die on the day that they died, but it wouldn't have bothered them that much. And it helped me in my grief to know that they would have felt that way. So I feel quite lucky that I've never had, you know, God, touch wood, experienced a death where it was really unexpected or a surprise. But that grief that I have for my grandparents because of my closeness to them is, you know, never goes away.
Yeah, and I think that is so important. There is no grief hierarchy. Grief is grief. You know, if you're the one feeling it and dealing with it, that's what matters. Like, it doesn't matter you telling yourself, well, this isn't as bad as someone else. And I, you know, I've said on the show before, you know, it depends who you're talking to. Sometimes people talk to me like, oh God, you lost your dad at 15. And then I'll meet someone who lost their mum when they were 1 year old. And you think, oh God, well, I'm lucky. You know, there's always a scale of these things. And there's always someone better, someone worse. You can only cope with your own grief, and it is so important not to judge it in that way. And, you know, they sound like they were parental roles to you, so that is, of course, you grieve that.
Yeah, definitely. I do think that there is something in us though that makes us look for comfort And it's not a right way of looking for comfort, I don't think, by comparison. You know, we try to think, oh, well, at least I don't have it as bad as that person. Mm. Or, oh, at least I can manage, but that person must find it really... It's a sort of way that we have of coping. And I was reading an amazing article. It was just in The Guardian by Mirokey Mills.
Yeah, I read it as well.
Yeah, her teenage daughter died in really tragic circumstances in hospital of sepsis, undiagnosed sepsis, after an accident, a bicycle accident. And she talks about comparison grief and how she envies people who can say, I did everything that I could, or this situation was unavoidable, or we threw all the money that we had at this problem, we still couldn't fix it. Like, she envies those people because she has the nagging doubt in her mind, which, you know, if you read the article, I don't think she should blame herself for a moment, but she has the nagging doubt in her mind that she could have done more, she could have stopped it, she could have questioned the doctors, you know. So I think, yeah, in grief, we all look to other people's experiences to work out, how bad should I be feeling? How is this normal? Is it okay that I still sometimes... I mean, now, you know, my grandmother died in 2006, and I was pregnant with my daughter then, and my daughter's now 16. So 16 years ago, I always have a measure of exactly when my grandma died. And I still wake up some mornings and think, oh, I must call my grandma.
Yeah.
Or I must, something happens and I think, oh, I really want to tell my grandma about that. Every time Strictly rolls around, I think of her, because I used to speak to her every morning on my walk to work to talk about what had happened on the Strictly catch up program the night before. And it was like a ritual for us. And so every time I think, oh, it's another series that she hasn't seen. And that's barely like, you know, that Strictly started when my son was born, and he's 18. So I watched 2 years of Strictly with my grandma, and I've had 16 without. And I still think that I should call her and tell her about it.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? I know. I think that article, I would recommend people seek it out and read it. It was an incredibly written article, incredibly heartfelt and compassionate and empathetic, you know, the way she was talking about her grief and what had happened to her. And I think that comparison you're talking about is really interesting. And I wonder if it's partly being like sort of tribal people, of like, you know, we are people that need to be in a community. And partly there is this, you look to your others to, like you said, to understand yourself, of like, oh, I my house is not as big as that house. Like, my grief is not as bad as that grief. Like, it's how we sort of measure ourselves. And I think it's okay. It's definitely okay to use it sometimes to help yourself, but it's important to also at the same time be like, but this is how I feel. Like, I still, like you said, I still miss my grandma, despite, you know, her living to her 80s and having a good life and all of those things. You still miss her. And it's sort of accepting your own emotions, even though it's very important to go, oh yes, it could have been worse and it could have been better and I'm very lucky and all that stuff. I think it's helpful, but I think it doesn't take away how you literally feel, which is maybe you still want to call her. And I mean, we are both mega Strictly fans, so I appreciate your do you think part of it is like, it's such a weird thing to be a mega Strictly fan, that it's quite nice to have somebody who really will just talk to you about it. Like,
oh yeah, totally.
Who just will not judge you for it. Be like, yeah, no, yeah, that tango was not as good as the one that happened.
Well, my grandparents were amateur ballroom champions.
Oh wow.
In the 1950s. Weirdly enough, or not weirdly, but strangely enough for this podcast, because they lost a child. They had a 3-year-old daughter who died of meningitis in 1948.
Oh, God.
And a miserable, horrible experience, which again, I was kind of reliving through that article of Mirokey Mills, of, you know, this is the most difficult grief, I think, is when a parent loses a child. And I was very close to my grandma, so I knew a lot about how she'd experienced that. My dad was a baby. Their daughter was 3. She died very suddenly because the meningitis was not diagnosed, didn't get her to hospital in time. And through the sort of late 40s, early 50s, they really struggled, you know, to keep their marriage together, to raise a baby whilst grieving this little girl. And eventually, my grandma, being very kind of can-do person, she said, right, we're going to dance lessons because you need to cheer up.
Oh, my God.
We need to have something outside of ourselves. So they started going to these dance lessons, and they ran a shop, you know, they ran a grocer store. So they never took any time off. So it's quite a difficult thing for them to make the time for this. But there's these just amazing pictures of them, like something out of, you know, the film Strictly Ballroom, where, you know, my granddad's wearing a ridiculous kind of matador costume with a giant burgundy silk cummerbund, which my grandma would have made on a sewing machine. And it sort of was the making of them, really, through the 50s. And I think they probably dropped it after about 5 or 6 years. But it definitely gave them back a connection between themselves as a couple, which is one of the things that people always say about when you lose a child. It's very difficult to keep your relationship together because you have to become, you know, my grandma talked to me about this, you have to remember the person that you were before the child died and the relationship that you had together, but you have to also start a new relationship with, as a grieving person, with another grieving person. It's almost like you have to kind of meet again.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So Strictly was like a really meaningful thing for my grandma, because she saw, you know, people now get very sort of misty eyed about Strictly, don't they? And they have all these journeys, and it's seen as something bigger than it is, because it allows people to discover a side of themselves and we get to see people blossom and all of that. But my grandma sort of knew all of that before anyone realized it. So she was really into it and championed it from the beginning. So that was a very sweet connection that we had, and a thing that we'd both love to talk about.
What an amazing... I'm a bit not blown away, but I'm a bit I'm impressed with Vera that she had the foresight to say, right, we need to do something about this. And she did it in that time when, you know, mental health was not being discussed and grieving was packed away. And I'm sure there were lots of people who had lost children and it just wasn't discussed in that way, because that was the time that she found something. And that your granddad also agreed, was like, yeah, we do need to do this, and went and wore the matador outfit and the cummerbund. Like, it would have been so easy for both of them not to make those choices, but I think that says a lot about, I feel like I understand part of her as a person, that that's the choice she made.
Yeah, I think in those days, I mean, I did talk to her a lot about this when I was growing up, and probably when I was a teenager most of all. There wasn't really an outlet to talk about these things. And my grandma used to always say that she found it very difficult when she would meet people and they would say, oh, you know, you're a mum, you have children, how many children do you have?
Yeah.
And that, you know, you have to answer that question for about 20 years.
Yeah.
And you have to decide whether to say, oh, I have two children, but one of them has died,
yeah.
which you don't want to say, because then you'll make the other person feel uncomfortable. You'll make yourself feel upset. But you also don't want to say, oh, yeah, I have one child, because you don't. So she knew that that was something that was very difficult to talk about, very difficult to be open about. And, you know, certainly the idea of counselling or therapy or anything like that was completely unknown. And yeah, I suppose my granddad was not quite as open talking about it. And I think that my grandma was aware of that, that there needed to be an outlet, you know, there needed to be a recognition of this is tough and you need to come out of yourself in some way. You know, obviously a talking therapy is one way of doing it, but reinventing yourself by doing something fun or exciting or different is another way of doing it. And that's what she tried to do through dancing. I'll always remember her saying to me as well that a few months, I think, or maybe it was longer than a few months, maybe more like a year or something, I don't know, after her daughter died, they finally decided that they could go to the cinema. Before then, they hadn't wanted to go because they'd thought, you know, how can you go to the cinema when your child has died?
Yeah.
All those kind of tiny decisions about what you do in life, they become so massive. Anyway, so they went to the cinema and they went to see some film that was a comedy or something. And she said she remembered laughing out loud and then clamping her hand over her mouth to stop the laughter from coming out, because she thought, how dare you laugh? You know, how dare you enjoy yourself? And then she came away and thought about it some more and thought, actually, no, how can you not laugh? Like, how can you not go to the cinema and enjoy yourself? You have to carry on. So she clearly had a kind of an idea in her head of how you need to work these things through and how you need to not judge yourself and how you need to actually take practical steps and accept the moments that are really guilt making, like going to the cinema for the first time and laughing when you don't feel like you should. Just accept all the huge mass of complications in those emotions. So she was, you know, it's incredible. I feel incredibly privileged that I had the kind of relationship with her where we could talk about these things.
God, what an amazing... I'm a bit astounded, because I just think the way she's talking about stuff, it's almost... I don't mean patronising, but it's almost like that very sort of modern framing of things, of being able to... Because mental health at that time, so many people did just go, well... you're wrong, you know, you shouldn't be happy, or that let's not talk about it, but the fact that she was able to go, oh, hang on a minute, I can laugh, this isn't fair, I'm gonna have to live, like. And for her too, what I'm really interested in, Viv, is that she spoke so honestly to you about stuff.
Yeah, well,
like,
I think
was obviously very open with you, which is what an amazing, like you said, privilege to have that.
Yeah, she was a very open person, and she spoke to people very easily. She was very charismatic. She ran the shop. You know, she was a real, like if Cilla Black ran a corner shop, you know, that's what she was like. And she was always glammed up. You know, she later became an Avon lady, always had lipstick on, or had her hair set every week at the hairdressers, and then, you know, never touched it for a week. She was always very on, you know, and very open with people. I think most people did not ask her about those things. And so she didn't talk to people. She didn't open that conversation with people, but I did, because I'm really nosy and I always want to know everything about everything. And how did this happen? And how did you feel? And like, that's just how I am. And I asked her those things, and I, you know, didn't force her to talk about it. But I was persistent in asking, and she was open enough to talk about it.
But yeah, amazing. Amazing that you, again, had the foresight to ask her. Because again, that is such a common regret that people have of, oh, I didn't ask, I didn't think. And that you were persistent, and that she was open with you. And I think, I'm always a bit astounded. My grandmother was a very cold. the one that we saw all the time. And again, very glamorous, hair set every week, you know, but was very like... there was no, you didn't ask questions. You were expected to behave, not really speak to her and then leave. And so I always find it really lovely when there's that relationship where it's very human, that she, you know, talked to you and shared those thoughts with you and explained such a painful part of her life. I mean, my God, that must have been just awful. And that question, we talk about that a lot on the show, of, you know, the questions you get asked. And I've heard it before from people who've lost siblings as well. You know, how many brothers and sisters you have? And you're like, well, you know, I did have two, but now I only have one. And it is a really, really difficult question. And having to navigate that, when you said at a time when people don't really want, they just want you to say the thing that's going to keep the conversation going. I mean, maybe I'm being unfair in the past. Obviously, I'm just using the stereotypical cliches of what the 40s and 50s were like.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd.
So she passed away first, is that right? No.
My granddad died in 2001 because he was 5 years older than her.
Right, okay.
Doesn't mean anything, does it? But yeah.
No. What did he die of? What happened?
He died... Well, I guess my parents might have a different story to this because they may have more access to his medical records than I had. But I would say he died of old age.
Right.
You know, he died a really, really great death. He died at home in his own bed. No. I was there. My grandma was there. My husband was there. He was having end of life care. So he was on morphine. But we were all able to say goodbye to him and he was able to say goodbye to us.
Wow.
So that was pretty extraordinary. It did happen quite quickly, and I mean, I suppose when somebody dies, it's always too soon, isn't it?
Yeah.
But we knew for about 3 days that it was coming, and so he was moved out. He was in a home, and he was moved out of his home, out of the home, back into his own home, and so we had that chance to know that this was happening. He'd had, you know, like lots of old people, he'd had all kinds of heart problems and various other problems that, you know, he'd just about recovered from, and he just got more and more rickety. And then I think he was 86 when he died, or maybe he's 84, can't remember. But yeah, he'd had a good innings and he'd pretty much said so.
And how was your grandmother at this time then? How did she cope with it?
She was, lived up to her reputation of being extremely practical. So she was the one who'd masterminded the move to get him out of the home, because she had quite a lot of resistance to that. Of people saying, you know, it's much easier for us to care for him here. Mm. It's going to be more comfortable for him. The journey is only, you know, it's like a 20-minute journey or something, but the journey's not going to be easy in an ambulance, et cetera, et cetera. She's like, no. I want him at home. And she was very strong in forcing that through. And I think that helped her. You know, I think if you get to make proactive choices of, no, this is the way I want this to be done, this is what's right for me, this is what's right for us, I think those things, you know, the word empowering is overused these days, but I think those things are empowering, and they perhaps help to prepare you for your grief a bit better and help you through it, because she felt like she had choices and she'd done things the way she wanted to and for him. She wanted to do it for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was sad though, because, you know, they were married for, you know, well over 50 years. I'm trying to think, did we actually celebrate their 60th? I don't think we did, but we certainly celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary. And they were, you know, absolute soulmates, having especially gone through this really difficult thing of losing their daughter. And she was bereft after he died. And she lived in a two-bedroom place, and she moved into the other bedroom because she didn't want to sleep in the same room that she'd shared with him. She was too much. And she was pretty heartbroken. And she lived another 5 years.
Yeah.
And she, you know, did recover during that time and coped and was determined to cope and determined not to fade away or be broken by that grief. And she had, you know, I had my first child 2 years after my granddad died, and so she had a great relationship. That was her first and only grandchild that she met. I was pregnant with my daughter, and she knew about that before she died. So she had a new life as a grandmother. That was maybe a helpful thing. And she was somebody who always had loads of friends, loads of interests, always got somebody coming around for a drink, never afraid to ask for help, you know, if she felt ill. You know, I think it's really difficult as you get older, you can get very proud and perhaps you don't want to go to the doctors or you don't want to do this, that and the other. She was never like that. So as soon as she felt a bit ill, she would go and see someone. If she was down, she would go and sort that out. She was a very, very proactive person and, you know, a great model of how to handle old age and how to handle losing someone when you're really old.
Because, it must be so hard, you know, so hard to lose someone when it's your life, isn't it? It's your entire part of who you are, 50% of what you've been through together. And then, so she passed away in 2006. Were you with her? What happened with her?
Yeah, that was much more dramatic and in some ways quite traumatic. It took me quite a long time to get over this, really, and to grieve my grandma in more of the way that I grieved my grandfather, which was kind of more with gratitude. And in the end, I do have gratitude for the way that she died, but I'm sure she won't mind if I'm not exactly going to make this into a hilarious story, but there are amusing elements to it. Yeah. In that,
there always are. It's life. Yeah. Nothing is ever all somber or all funny.
Weirdly, when my granddad died, my parents were away on holiday. And so we were there with him when he died and looking after helping my grandmother. And then weirdly, when my grandmother died, because my parents and my grandparents lived in the same place, whereas we were in the West Country, we were living in London. So we'd have to come down to see them. And weirdly, my parents were away when my grandmother died. So we'd gone down there, me and my husband and my son, who was then a toddler, we'd gone down there to spend some time with her. I think we must have been staying at my parents' house. And we went round to see her one evening. We had a great time. We must have left her because we needed to put my little boy to bed because he would have been two then. Otherwise, I'm kind of thinking, why didn't we spend the evening with her?
Yeah.
But we didn't spend the evening with her because we had to get, you know, 2-year-old to bed. And so we would have then watched the Eurovision at home.
Yeah.
And she would have watched the Eurovision at home. And again, Eurovision's a bit like Strictly. It's something that we were really into and we really loved watching. And we went round to visit her the next morning and there was no answer. And I could then see that she was just lying in the hallway. I could see through the front door. And, you know, my son, who was two, was shouting, Nana, Nana, where are you? You know, not realising anything's wrong. And I've initially thought that, you know, she's just this second had a fall.
Yeah.
But she hadn't. She had died the night before. And we will never know whether she watched the Eurovision or not. And I mean, we used to joke, and I'm sure she wouldn't mind me saying this, that it was the year that Lordi won the Eurovision, who were, I think they're Icelandic.
Oh, yes, sorry. I love Eurovision and I was panicking. Yeah. I thought, oh my God, I don't know what you're talking about. Yes, sort of the heavy metal.
Death metal.
Yeah, yes.
Lord of the Rings, orc style.
Iceland, were they? No.
Heavy rock. Yeah. Iceland.
Yeah.
And they won. And sometimes I think, the shock of that probably did kill her. But, you know, she, so we'll never know whether she experienced the abomination that was the triumph of Lordi.
Either she saw it and was shocked, and or thank God she didn't get to see it. Do you know what I mean?
Either way. So that was a very shocking and strange experience. That's maybe one of the strangest experiences of my life.
How did you call a neighbor?
We had to break into the house, so we really weren't sure whether she was, you know, we could just see her lying on the ground and that she wasn't responding. And so we broke into the house whilst calling, you know, the emergency services. And then, you know, it's so weird. If anybody's ever been in a situation like this, I'll know exactly how it feels. Time stops. So I experience my memory of that time of, like, it must have taken about 6 hours, but actually it probably took 10 minutes from us, like, seeing her breaking down the door, calling the ambulance coming, the time, and then finding out that she had died. And, you know, comically also, I was massively pregnant.
Oh, God.
I was huge.
Yeah.
I mean, it really, like, looked like I was having twins or triplets. Yep. It was only one baby.
But,
you know, I famously have very large babies and become very large. when I had my first baby, the midwife said we thought it was going to be a very big baby, but it turned out to be mostly mum. So I do get very large. And I remember the next door neighbour coming round to see if they could help and to see what was going on. And we'd left our son with them so that he wasn't caught up in all of this. And he came round and I didn't really know him that well. And I was crying and I hugged him, or I tried to hug him. But my belly was so gigantic, I could sort of hardly reach him. So I was sort of like touching his shoulders and trying to hug him. And he was kind of trying to pull away from me.
That is so funny, Viv.
I really wish that my grandmother was here to see this, because she would find it very funny.
Oh my God.
And I found that in that moment as well, there were a lot of comical things happened. Like somebody in the emergency services turned up and said, "You can't leave until the police get here because they have to check that it's not a decapitation."
What?
And I was like, why would you say that to me? Why?
Oh,
look, can you see? I am heavily pregnant. I've just had a terrible shock. One of the people I love most in all of the world.
Oh, my God.
Has died.
What?
And you're talking to me about a decapitation.
But surely you could see she hadn't been decapitated.
No, I know, but the police have to come and certify that or something. I don't know.
She's all there. Like, what are they?
I know,
who's checking?
Incredibly weird.
Oh
so, yeah, the reality was she probably had a heart attack or a stroke.
Oh.
I can't remember if it was ever properly found out. But, yeah, it's funny when things like that happen as well, especially when somebody has died, obviously, the night before.
Yeah.
Because you do get caught up in these questions of, like, the police do have to come and they have to check, like, is it possible that somebody broke in?
Yeah.
Is it possible that, you know, she was startled by somebody, or that there was an altercation, or that there's, you know, they have to rule out that it's not a crime.
Oh, God.
And that's in itself quite stressful.
Yeah. Yeah, I think any death where the police have to come and check something.
Yes, but there was no foul play other than the performance of Lordy at the Eurovision.
Oh my God. And being, I mean, I really relate, because I was massively pregnant when my child was about 2.5, and you're a unit, you know, you're not a person that people can just be like, oh, this has happened. It's like they are talking to you plus giant belly plus toddler. Like it's a lot to manage in that situation. So that must have been so difficult for you and so shocking to have to face all that. And then your parents, well, that's weird that they're always away when this is happening.
Yeah, it was weird. I think now that I remember, my dad was away, but my mum was around, but she wasn't around on that morning. So I then had to go and get her. So I had to drive somewhere to get her and tell her. I'm just trying to think. Yeah, I guess we would have all had mobile phones then. Why didn't I tell her on the phone? I don't know.
Maybe,
but I didn't tell her on the
shock
phone.
Or something. Yeah.
But she knew as soon as she saw my face.
Oh.
Yeah. But again, though, in a way, when I say about gratitude and processing traumatic moments, I think with some deaths, you know, every grief is different, hence the point of this podcast. But I think there, with some grief, there comes a moment of acceptance.
Mm.
And yes, that experience was really shocking. There are some comic moments that my grandma would have appreciated. But I can now pass over into the kind of grief that is about appreciating her life, remembering all the amazing things we used to do together, remembering what a fun person she was. And you pass over into something that is more easier to cope with.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, that is important to acknowledge and important. It's not lucky. It's just that thing of, I guess we're back to comparison, aren't we? But I feel the same, you know, like I feel, even though I was very young and it was very sad and tragic that he died, there were lots of things that I can say, well, we were with him and, you know, we did have 2 months. And again, it's that thing where anything like that, those little like tiny bridges really enable you to pass over to that other place where you can find a softening or an easing of the pain. And I think they are really important. They are really important in any grief to be like, well, there was that. And even though you're not like glad they died or you wouldn't choose it, like I think those things are really important. And I think you have to come to that conclusion. I think what sometimes hurts people is when they like other people say, oh, well, they had a good innings. And you're like, well, hang on a minute. Like I haven't felt like that yet. I miss them, even though they were 80, even, you know. So I think other people try and offer them to you, but it's sort of something you have to personally go through to be able to, you know, laugh about it rather than thinking, oh God, this is so awful, I just found my grandmother on the floor.
Yeah, I think some of it is, you know how I've always meant to look up whether this is a myth and a cliche or it's actually true. But you know how they say that in some languages they have 100 words for snow.
Oh yeah, like
Swedish or Icelandic or whatever. I'm sure they do. Or maybe not 100, but they have more than one word. I feel like we should have more than one word for grief.
Yes.
And
yes.
Maybe in some languages they do.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be like there are certain stages of grief and you have to conform to these five stages. There should maybe be like 3,000 words for grief. Because it's all to do with, I think, the nature of your relationship with that person, your relationship with the story around their death, what's going on in your life. Like, you know, for me, it was horrible that I was pregnant and my grandma was going to never meet her granddaughter. But also I sensed a continuation there, and that's why I named my daughter after her.
Yeah.
And I did get some comfort from that. You know, I'm not going to break into a rendition of The Circle of Life. Well, I'm tempted to though. You know, I did get some comfort from that kind of slightly cheesy idea that, you know, okay, this is how it is. And I remember, you know, being at her funeral and feeling people nervously eyeing my belly.
Yeah. Like, oh God.
You know, okay, there's one in the ground and one inside you. Like, so those things, you know, our experiences are extremely individual. I think that's what it is. And we don't necessarily have the language for that. And a lot of the interactions that we've been talking about, when we talk about this idea of comparison, they're kind of to do with etiquette, you know, and that people don't quite know what to say. There's the things that you say in public and the things that you say as a platitude and the things that you say in private.
Yeah, and I so much of it is British politeness, culture, trying to find a way. And I think what you said there is so true is the lack of language. I just couldn't think of the word. The lack of nuance that we have. And, you know, the joke is as well with our language, isn't it? Like, we have so many different words for rain, drizzle, mizzle, like muggy, like all this descriptiveness we have for our weather that we then don't have for our emotions. And I completely agree with you. And it wasn't until I started this podcast, because of my relationship with my grandmothers, both of them I wasn't very close to at all. So when someone first said to me, oh, like, I'm sort of devastated my grandmother died, I couldn't get my head around it. Because I was like, what is it like to have a grandmother like that? Like, I honestly was like, oh. And then it was talking to other people, I was like, oh, I see. I had a very close relationship with my grandfather. But he died 6 months after my dad. So poor, you know, it was kind of overshadowed. It was like, well, right. Okay, well, we're dealing with this now. And it wasn't until, I remember there's an episode with Sian Harries, wonderful Welsh comedian and comic writer, and who was extremely close to both her grandparents, similar to you. And talking to her, that really made me understand, like, it's just individual, isn't it? It's like what relationship you had, of course. But we apply our same labels of like, oh, well, I have a grandmother, therefore I understand how you feel when you lose a grandmother. And funny enough, I was pregnant at my grandmother's funeral. And with a girl, and everyone was like, oh, are you going to name her? And I was like, no, like, I'm not, because she was a very distant woman that lived around the corner from me and literally never asked me a single question, like barely spoke to me. So I was like, no, why would I want to continue that in a way? And I don't, you know, I have no malice towards the woman. She had her own problems. It's just who she was. And that's just who I was. We just didn't particularly gel. But I think that's so nice that you had that and that you could acknowledge that circle of life. And it is a cliche, but also it's a cliche for a damn good reason. And I just want to ask, this is a bit of a not cheeky question, but like, do you think that with you, because she had lost a daughter, there was something in that relationship with you that she was able to find again?
Oh, that's a totally reasonable question, Carrie. And it's one I've thought about a lot. Yes, I do. And for me, again, as I get older as well, and it's been 16 years since my grandmother died and 21 years since my granddad died, and you know, I still have loads of old photos of their daughter who died in 1948, and all of that stuff is kind of carried on in me. I've looked back on it all and thought about it a lot, and I can see it's very nuanced, I think. On the one hand, I think it was a really incredible thing, and it really taught me that, and I don't want to be trite about this, because I think when a child, when you lose a child, I mean, you're talking about how grief is not the same for anyone. I mean, that is like times a million. Times a bazillion if your child dies before you. I've spoken to lots of people about this, and I know that one thing that is quite frustrating sometimes for parents who have lost children is that people want them to like get together with other parents who have lost children.
Right. As if
somehow that's going to give them a comfort. I mean, it's such a unique, nuanced grief and terror that it's impossible to compare your circumstances to anyone else. But so I don't want to say this in a trite way, but it, my grandmother's experience taught me that life will bring other stuff to you in the future. That doesn't sound very profound, but I really feel like when I was born and my sister was born, my grandmother was clearly, and my granddad as well, but my grandmother in particular, they were clearly set on having a great relationship with us and not wasting a second. And that is so incredible and powerful. And would they have been like that had their daughter survived? You know, probably. Who knows? But my as much as my relationship with her and her relationship towards us, me and my sister, my grandmother did live every single day as if it was her last, and every good thing that happened to her, she sucked the life out of it. You know, she never wallowed in anything. She processed stuff that was, you know, if something bad happened, she would work it through. She was, you know, she wasn't somebody who swept things under the carpet. She kept things out in the open and really tried to embrace life. And I really, really learned that from her. So, yeah, I do think, yeah, in answer to your question, that it did affect our relationship, the fact that she was a parent who had lost a child. So being a grandparent was incredibly precious to her. But on the flip side of that, there's a tiny little bit of grit in that oyster, which is that I wondered sometimes, I do wonder now sometimes, how much of that relationship I had with her was a compensation for the loss of someone else who I could never even know.
Yeah.
But that's also okay. That is okay, you know, because that's what happened to her, and I'm happy for her to deal with it however she did, and I'm happy to benefit from the huge love that she gave to me.
I think that's really profound, Viv. I just think I do.
Well, I have thought about this a lot, Carrie, and I've had a lot of therapy. So I have been through this a lot of times.
And I think it comes back to the obsession that I have, thanks to Griefcast, is that there's always two truths at the same time, and like, you know, and we have to hold them, and that's what life is trying to hold things that are difficult at the same time. And I think you're right, you know, yeah, of course it must have given her that joy to suddenly have two little girls around after losing a little girl. How can you not have made that connection? But as you said, you know, you weren't her daughters, and that pain doesn't magically go away when you get grandkids. It's not like, oh, now I feel fine. But what you do, it's sort of like what you do with that, isn't it? And I agree with you. There's no sort of way to sum it up. But it sounds like she really lived very wholeheartedly, which sounds like bad writing.
I'm struggling to put it up. Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. Yeah, she did. She really, really lived life. I would say, you know, this is a really hard thing to express, but in a very sort of serious way, in knowing like the absolute, I do think, I know we're trying not to talk about comparisons and hierarchy of grief here, but I do think it's probably the worst thing that can happen to you, actually, is to lose a child.
Well, we do, the thing that I have read over and over again is there's no hierarchy of grief apart from losing a child, which trumps everything.
Right.
Yeah. It's like that does.
So
of course it does.
She, having experienced the worst of life.
Mm.
She took life very, very seriously, whilst at the same time wearing it very, very lightly.
Yeah.
And that is a huge skill.
It's huge. It's absolutely huge. And not, you know, not to condemn anyone that can't do that. It's really difficult. And it must have been so hard for her. But to be near someone that is living like that can be a really... yeah, empowering.
Oh yeah, it was great for me.
Yeah,
it was great for me.
Yeah, and my grandpa, who I was close to, he was married to the cold grandmother and never spoke to me. I mean, she didn't need to speak because he did all the talking. That was the thing. And he was a survivor of prisoner of war in Singapore. So he had been out in Asia and been caught, and he lived life like everything was. Yeah, you know, he talked about that a lot, his experience a lot, and he lived it as if, like, he appreciated everything. He used to say to me, you know, like, even the salt on my food I taste, because once I didn't have that and I missed it. And yeah, when my dad died, wow. it broke him. Like he said, he died 6 months after my dad. He just and it was such a shock to see someone who had lived and lived and just enjoyed every single moment just go, no, I'm done. And he used to say, that's all he said for 6 months after my dad died. He'd just say, he isn't right. It isn't right. It's in the wrong order. And so I do think, but I know what it's like to live, to be near their grandparent who is just brilliant, you know? And when you're a grandkid, you can appreciate, you get such a different relationship to them because you're obviously not getting any of their neurosis and stress on a day-to-day basis. You're just getting fun them most of the time. So yeah, she sounds like an amazing woman. Like, I just think, my God, what a way to deal with what life has handed you, because we have no control over that, but we do have control over how we handle it. That's all we have. And it's just not always possible to live like that, but it sounds like she really did.
Yeah, she gave it a bloody good go. I mean, yeah. She'd be the last person to say, oh, I'm a saint and I know everything because I've experienced the death of a child. She'd be like, no, I'm just as messed up as anybody else.
And if it's not sainthood, is it? It's just, that's the thing. It's not like, oh, they're so wonderful. All they did was give, give, give. It's like they just lived. And that's joyous to be around. Yeah.
Well, there's a quote, which I'm trying to remember who it's by. I think it might be Einstein, which is, you can live your life as if everything is a miracle or nothing is a miracle.
Oh, wow,
and I remember, you know, cheesy quote, whatever, but I remember seeing that quote for the first time and thinking, oh yeah, that's what my grandma does.
Yeah.
You know, she lives everything as if, oh yeah, this day's not coming back.
Yeah. And that's what my grandpa was like as well. And it was amazing to have someone, like, whenever anything new was invented or anything happened, he would lose his mind. He would, like, come and grab you and be like, look at this, it's a bread maker, like, hey, put the flour in a bread, can you believe it, like, it's a miracle, because he had lived through this awful experience. And it is nice to be around people who live like that, because you do, it does make you pull yourself up and go, oh yeah, I guess that is really cool. I guess that is an amazing thing. I just take it, you take so much for granted. And I do, yeah, it's important to say, it's not, and I feel like that, you know, losing someone extremely close to you doesn't make you a saint at all, but it does make you aware of the worst part of living, and then how you go forward from that is an interesting journey. I kind of wished I'd been on a WhatsApp with you and your grandma as well, as a massive Strictly and Eurovision fan.
Oh yeah, you would have loved it. I like to think that she would be up in arms about Anton Dubek being a judge.
Oh good.
But
yes.
She could also go totally the opposite way.
Oh,
so
yeah.
That's slightly torturing for me.
She might have approved. Do you think she just would have liked him so much? More
I
Anton the better.
Maybe, although, you know, I think middle period Anton, where he was doing all of the joke dancing with Anne Widdecombe, Anne Widdecombe was after my grandmother's death.
Yeah,
God.
Thank God.
Because that would have been the death of her, if not Lordy. Then Anne Widdecombe dressed as a canary being thrown around in the name of ballroom dancing, my grandma would have found it so offensive.
And I agree. Vera, I agree. It was, it wasn't a highlight for anybody, apart from Anne Widdecombe. Oh, Viv, thank you so much for talking to me about Vera and Ivor. They're just, what a brilliant pair of people, and how wonderful to hear about them. It was really, really wonderful.
Oh, thanks, Carrie. Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity, because it's not often that you get to talk like this about something that you've thought about a lot yourself.
Yeah,
and you.
Yeah.
you know, if anybody ever meets me at a party, I'm not going to drag you off into a corner and tell you this story. Well, I might do.
I wish well, you would if it was me. That's how I deal with parties. I'm like, tell me about your dead person. I know, they sound epic.
But yeah, thank you for the opportunity to remember them.
You can find out more about Viv's work if you head to vivgroskop.com. That's VIVGROSKOP.com. That's where you can find all her information about her books and her podcasts. You can listen to How to Own the Room as well, wherever you get your podcasts, and buy her books in all the usual places. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast. The show was recorded remotely. It was edited by Kate Holland. The music was provided by the Glue Ensemble. And social animation is provided by Alice Loveday. If you see those nice little things we've been doing on Twitter and Instagram. And thank you for getting this far. I thoroughly appreciate you listening to the end. The book, as I said, is out in January. Please do pre-order it. That would be much appreciated. And remember, you are not alone.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.